This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, where you got me, Kevin Hagland, Corey Majors, and Jacob Ray rocking the board with us today. Alec will be back tomorrow. Now, there's
You're telling me you've never wanted to pump in the ocean or pump in the pool?
We're asking the questions that matter.
The surfboard is a surfboard.
What the hell is a pump surfboard?
You've seen it. It's that right there. It's the pump surfboard. It's the thing that kind of you pump it up and down.
Oh, okay.
You get in the pool and just pump around for a little bit.
So while we're playing the intro music, Corey goes, man, I want to ride a pump surfboard. And I was like, I don't know what that means. We're going to get to MLB's all breakout team in just a minute, but the Stars are back in action again tonight. So in the meantime, if you can give me cut number 7, the Stars were playing this weekend and they were able to pick up another pair of points.
Here we go to OG.
The Flyers win the draw back, but a foot race as Robertson goes to challenge, and the Stars with the puck in front score over immediately. Thomas Harley. He starts.
Now, what's amazing about that is Jake was able to play the entirety of overtime because it took 9 seconds. Don't worry, that's not a dig. You did the right thing. It took 9 seconds, and you didn't even win.
Yeah.
Face-off is amazing. But Thomas Harley is somebody that we have talked about quite a bit, especially looking at the prospect of being without Miro to start the playoffs. You were needing more people to step up and to see Thomas Harley putting work in, getting that 2 points. It was a cool thing.
He's a really nice scoring defenseman, and he has a power shot too to go along with it, so that's always helpful. I'm still frustrated though. Can I be frustrated about the goal situation?
Yes.
And the way that was called, because I'm biased. All right, I'm a Stars fan, but my eyeballs tell me that thing was over the line, and I don't see how anybody was looking at it going, it's not. But I don't know, man. I don't know where the line actually stops, because it looks like it bleeds a little bit. The coloring just kind of bleeds in the ice a little bit, and it looked like it was there, but whatever.
So you think sharper paintwork on the ice might have led to a...
As Frank told us, that paint is painted underneath the ice onto like a white sheet or something like that. Yeah, and then they lay... And it's only like an inch or so of ice. It's not really that thick. So that's what we were told by a former assistant GM for the Stars. So it's not very thick. And so I do wonder how accurate that line is, and is there a better way to do this? Should the NHL consider putting a chip in the puck?
I know we did that, and remember Fox had that?
That was the blue streak thing, though. This is a chip to just confirm that the entire puck is past the line.
Because then they would shoot the puck, and it would have like this trail behind it.
That was awesome. I loved it for the first time.
And that puck cost $400 per puck.
Are you serious?
Yes. And so when a puck went out into the stands,
they'd have to go beat people up for it.
They sent people out to go back and get it.
And if it hit them in the head, they'd be like, don't worry, we got the puck.
That is something that happened to my mom when she was pregnant with me. Feel free to make your own jokes. But for the Dallas Stars, while I still think it's unlikely, you continue to keep a comfortable distance between yourself and Colorado, especially with 2 games in hand. And if you can win those 2 games in hand, you can beat Winnipeg in regulation. All of a sudden, you would only be 2 points back. I still don't think That's likely, and you're probably headed towards the series with Colorado, maybe with Minnesota, but got to keep getting some wins. We're going to talk more tomorrow for people who are still concerned about the goaltending, either tomorrow because the Stars play again tonight or Wednesday. We're going to go in depth on that again.
So you said 13 games left?
I believe that is correct.
It is a stay in front right now. You're going to keep chasing. You want to stay healthy, get yourself, prepared for the postseason, make sure that your group is working well together, and make sure they're all on the same page about what they're trying to accomplish, but stay in front of everybody else. If Winnipeg falls, then you can go take advantage of it. But that's where the Stars are right now.
So you might look.
But this is a very tough time to be a Pete DeBoer, right? Like, you want to tell the guys, let's chase.
Yeah.
But we don't need to get hurt trying to chase. So hockey's hockey, so you're going to be physical anyway. But you got to keep guys motivated somehow and not let them just fall off for the last 13 games.
I mean, it's not like they would go really hard to end the regular season and lose in the playoffs and say that they were burnt out because they had to play.
That happened with the Cowboys, Kevin.
What?
It did.
All right.
But that guy's gone now.
In the meantime, man.
There are questions about
him. I just think it's only fair if he throws some shade on the way out that we can just have some fun with it. If you can give me cut number 19, I want to transition back to baseball.
And the 3-1, and that ball is hit high and deep out into left field. Ward going back to his left. It sails out of here. Wyatt Langford, home runs in the first two games of this series, his 16th blast of the year to make it 7-3. The Rangers are back to within four.
By the way, I know we haven't officially seen confirmation of this, and I don't know how in-depth Bochy wants to go on to breaking down the minutia of his batting order before the season has actually started.
Everybody wants, that Evan Grant is sitting there every day going, all right, so who's hitting sixth? Yeah. Every single day he's trying to figure that out.
But
because he wants to break the news first.
Look, I'll break the news first, and then I'll admit I was wrong later if I'm wrong. Wyatt Langford's your three hitter.
Okay.
All right, I will be stunned if that's not the case, unless they wanted to take some radical approach to it and Marcus Semien is not the leader.
Or Josh Young. They're just like, Josh Young, he's the guy. I don't know. It'd be weird.
If it's not Wyatt Langford in the three hole, I will be very, very surprised. Now, it won't surprise you to know that there is an all breakout team for Major League Baseball this year. It has been put together by Jim Bowden, who, as you remember, is Mike Bassick's mortal enemy.
He's the one that traded him and hated him and everything,
and wouldn't
right?
pitch him.
Yeah, wouldn't pitch him.
He was like, I don't want you to pitch for us. So, yeah, I'll be interested in see if those two ever run into each other down the line. Actually,
they
think
will.
We had Bowden on one time, I think, so it'll probably be a cordial conversation. All right, so on the list, there are two Texas Rangers.
Before we get to those Rangers, the person they have at the top of the entirety of this, and it's the first person in the story for Jim Bowden, is a guy that Mike's been talking about, and that's Lawrence Butler.
Yes.
And we got a chance to see him live in spring training, and he delivered the same way he always does.
Look, as the A's move to their ballpark, that's definitely, for sure, absolutely going to be built on time in Las Vegas. Lawrence Butler is the guy they're like, this is our dude. We bought out arbitration a year or two of free agency because he's going to be the guy.
And the Rangers fans, you're going to get plenty of opportunities to see Lawrence Butler and see if he is having a breakout season.
Absolutely. And from the 972, I want Wyatt Langford at leadoff. I hear you on that. I just don't think that's likely to happen, especially to start the season.
Until Marcus Semien goes to Boch and says, or Boch brings him in and says, hey, we got to talk about this.
And I think that's fair. I'm not saying that text, I don't think you're wrong. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Here's what I hope. I hope Marcus Semien crushes it as leadoff and Wyatt Langford has to hit third.
Yeah. And you love it because you're like, what are you going to do? Pitch around Semien for what? To get to Seager?
Yeah.
And then you're going to pitch around him for what? To get to Wyatt?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to walk the bases loaded every first inning. All right. So Wyatt Langford is on the all breakout team. Not surprising. And I think that's fair because as much as he had a crazy September, he did not have the I'm here in the major leagues everyone take notice of me season that we all kind of thought.
Yeah,
right?
we expected that he would show up. And, I mean, Mike was like MVP. You know, he was top five at MVP, and we were expecting a lot more out of that.
Yes, yes.
And for that matter, you know, the outfield, there were some iffy moments in the outfield.
Okay, yeah.
That's fair.
But he hasn't even played outfield, period, for very long.
I know. There were a couple of those moments. There were moments at bat where maybe he got rookie called. And they were just sorry, Rook, you're not getting that call. And you're like, yeah, but you're Angel Hernandez. And that was 10 feet out, outside. And he's like, doesn't matter, you're out. So that happened a few times to him last year. And that was frustrating. He lived through it. He made his way through it. And I think he grew from it. And you saw even this year, Kevin, our interview with him, a little bit different than the first interview.
For sure.
I thought it was a lot better than the first one.
I did too.
And he knows now. He knows that, like, I have this natural gift. I'm very talented at this game, and I am willing to work hard at it. But now the next step is I have to be, when it comes to PR, I might be the face of this team. You know, I might be the one that's having to talk a lot. So there's a lot that's getting pushed onto this kid very early in his career. The expectations are another thing that are being pushed there.
So I want to talk about the other Rangers player on the list. I know a lot of people probably guess it's Rocker. Maybe they go back to Evan Carter. But alas, it is not. Robert Garcia.
Yes.
So one of the things that gets brought up in this, I know it's not like a this for that, but one of the reasons the Rangers moved off of Nathaniel Lowe is because they had an opportunity to go get Robert Garcia. Robert Garcia won't be arbitration eligible until 2027. So if he works out for this team as especially a high leverage bullpen arm, you're going to have him for a long time for cheap. So Bowden dove into, and I'm curious people's thoughts about Robert Garcia. The analytics loved Robert Garcia last year. They put him in the 98th percentile of pitchers in barrel percentage, I guess avoiding it, and hard hit rate. The 97th percentile in true ERA and 94th percentile in chase rate. So the point is, he misses the barrel of the bat, doesn't have a lot of hard hit pitches off of him, and he gets a lot of people to chase.
His off speed run value is 94%, which means like that's a high quality for off speed pitches from him.
And it's tricky, right? Because he had a negative WAR, an ERA above 4, and 13 holds versus 4 blown saves.
Yep.
Which those don't sound like overwhelming numbers whatsoever. But my question there is, does that mean a little bit of luck was at play? Because I know that's what a lot of analytic people will say. These are the true outcomes. And you're like, no, the true outcome is what actually happens on the damn field. And they're like, well, he just got unlucky. So if you think Robert Garcia was a victim of somewhat being unlucky, I mean, clearly there's a position for leverage arms in this bullpen. And I'm curious.
Yes, there is.
Yes. I'm curious, by the way, I know we get new listeners all the time. Leverage arms usually meaning the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. I realize there can be other really important parts in the game, but a lot of times people shorthand that for 7th, 8th, and 9th innings.
And it seems like Luke Jackson, Robert Garcia, Chris Martin are the three that Boach is going to run with unless they say, hey, this isn't quite working out. But Garcia,
which is possible.
He has about a 95 mile an hour fastball. His changeup drops down to 87. Like that's a nice drop in or change in speed.
Yep.
But it's also his location. I feel like his location may change just a little bit with Mike Maddux, because Mike Maddux likes to keep the ball low. And just looking at the history of Robert Garcia, it looks like he likes to pitch up in the zone.
And so not always, but that's usually problematic.
But with the Rangers and Mike Maddux's whole philosophy, it is definitely about not just changing side to side on the plate, but changing your eye level from low to high, high to low. He wants to stay low, but every once in a while he'll put one up by your eyeballs so that you're like, oh, I got to protect. And then he's like, all right, I got you away.
So if he can continue to have the impressive chase rate, he has a very impressive strikeout per nine. It was 11.3 last year. And then you just mentioned maybe the biggest part of all of this, Mike Maddux, who, it feels like, this is not being biased, is one of the most appreciated and respected pitching coaches in all of the game. If that helps with his consistency,
yeah.
I love to see it. And I love to see it because we've heard a lot about Rocker. Obviously, we hear all the time about Langford and, well, for a good reason. But I like Robert Garcia being dropped in on this list because if the Rangers have a spot where they really need somebody to make a bigger impact than predicted, it's leverage bullpen arms.
Absolutely. And if, yeah, you're right. If that's a spot where you see somebody have a breakout season, you're probably considering, hey, we didn't blow 40 saves this
yes.
year. You know, we were able to pick up even more because of it. And we feel very comfortable going into the playoffs. I'm hopeful that he's the guy. 6'4", that dude's a giant. When you see him on the mound, you're going to be looking at him going, oh my gosh.
Yes.
So good luck to everybody hitting against him this year.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, and I know it's a very different situation, but George Foreman and Bill Mercer. Let's celebrate two sports greats who passed away this weekend and the impact they leave. We'll do that next right here on The Fan.
Here's Flair from the ropes. Wants to toss Carey across. Carey's got him. Here's the Nelson pin. Go! Hey! The dream come true! Yes!
I love that audio. So that is Bill Mercer at the 1984. It would become the Parade of Champions, but I think at that time it was the David Von Erich Memorial Show. And I promise this is not going to be a segment about wrestling, but for different reasons and different impacts, probably nationally and locally, you lost George Foreman and Bill Mercer over the weekend. I believe George Foreman was 76 and Bill Mercer lived all of life. He was 99. Do you want to start with one or the other or just kind of talk about them however?
When it comes to George Foreman, Kevin, I saw this quote from George Foreman after he knocked out Michael Moore.
Yes.
Sure, the fight was fixed. I fixed it with my right hand.
Give me cut number 10, because that, at the time, was a shocking upset.
George Foreman enjoying his best round of the fight here in round 10. There's a right hand. Down goes Moore. He's flat on his back. He may not get up.
Not maybe. He's not moving.
Moore could be about to lose the heavyweight title.
I don't believe this.
Joe Cortez pulls off the count.
It's over.
It is over.
Holy
and George
cow.
Foreman has pulled off the miracle that no one thought possible.
By the way, shout out to those broadcasters for bringing the heat.
Mm-hmm.
That was excellent.
So, that dude could hit a ton. The movie Ali.
Yes.
Whenever he's in the room just hitting the heavy bag, and it's just like it's thunder every time his glove touches the bag, and that you even saw in that movie. I know that the real fight happened, but the pain every time George Foreman hit, he hit a ton.
So the fight of the century, the original fight of the century, was Muhammad Ali against Joe Frazier. Joe Frazier won that fight that was at the Garden. Now, they would fight two more times. Obviously, Ali would win the next two. But so Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali were both undefeated at the time. Biggest fight that's ever been. I mean, some will probably argue ever will be. Joe Frazier wins. Oh, my God, he beat Muhammad Ali. Nobody can beat Muhammad Ali. You know who beat Joe Frazier? George Foreman. He knocked him out in the second round. That same year, or I guess it was the next year, he fought Ken Norton, who had given Muhammad Ali all kinds of problems as well. Guess what happened? Knocked him out in the second round. And so that's why when George Foreman fought Muhammad Ali, that was, I know Ali won and the rope-a-dope strategy and everything like that. Obviously, that fight has its own totally different lore. But people were like, I don't know, man. You could be in trouble in this fight, Muhammad. Because, like, he had taken the dude who beat you and smashed him. Another guy that had beaten you and smashed him. And people were like, I don't know about that. So when he won that fight, that is one of the most famous fights of all time, the George Foreman, Muhammad Ali. But I want to go back to the Michael Moore thing. Because Muhammad Ali beat George Foreman for the heavyweight title in 1974.
Okay.
That was the last time that George Foreman was a real heavyweight champion. I know they have a bunch of knockoff belts and everything like that, but that was the last time he was a real heavyweight champion for 20 years.
Wow.
So when he beat Michael Moore, it'd been 20 years since he lost to Ali. And in the meantime, he also retired for like a decade.
Really?
And so the fact that he came back, and when you hear that level of excitement, it's because, well, that's not going to happen, because he had fought Evander Holyfield as part of his comeback and he lost. And so I don't think anybody thought this was really going to happen. And then he won and pandemonium broke out.
Yeah, it's kind of wild, too, that he beat a documentary director.
No, that's Michael Moore. This is Michael Moorer.
For me, though, it's his personality popped in these little ways that he'd pop in on like a Friday night show. Or when you watched him in his commercials with the Foreman grill.
He was on King of the Hill, and I forgot to ask for this clip, and I kicked myself for that. But him and Hank Hill get in a debate, and he was like, oh, you want to sell my grills in your store? And he goes, oh, I'm sorry, we don't do novelty grills. And like George Foreman, like the actual George Foreman's like, novelty grill? And he is furious about that. But
he punched a gas tank.
You make a great point. For a long time, I wonder how many people were like, oh yeah, the grill guy?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, he's actually a multi-time heavyweight champion of the world, but you know, and is one of the most famous fights that has ever been. But don't worry about that. Yes. The grill guy.
If that's the
what
one.
Works for you. So it is unfortunate because you were right. Great fighter. Unbelievable fighter. A great feels like it's underselling him. Unbelievable fighter, businessman, and fascinating personality quirk that he named all of his kids George as well, which I've always been interested in.
Yeah, I respect that a lot. If you can name all your kids George and feel confident about it, you're pretty confident in your skin. You know what I mean? And that's where he was. But raw power. He was a power boxer by all means.
He was. So I understand why nationally that's the bigger story. I get that. I really do. But I want to talk some more about Bill Mercer, because I know you care about this. I care about this. I think the people of North Texas should care about this a lot, as if they already don't. So for me, Bill Mercer is the voice of world-class championship wrestling. So that's the Von Erichs, that's the Sportatorium and everything like that. But also, I don't want it to make it sound like he was just the wrestling guy, because he did stuff with...
The Cowboys?
Exactly. The Cowboys, the Rangers. But I want to give you cut number 9. This is Bill Mercer talking to Lee Harvey Oswald as he's been taken in for the apparent assassination of the president.
You have been.
Nobody said what?
Sir? You have been.
Nobody said what?
Okay, we can't.
That was Oswald. Lee Oswald, who was charged with the murder of the president of the United States. He's been taken back upstairs.
So I know it's hard to hear because you hear somebody yelling in the background. That is Bill Mercer essentially telling Lee Harvey Oswald that he's being charged with shooting and killing the president.
Yeah.
Actually, at that time, it might have just been shooting. They might not have pronounced him dead yet. But so think about it. You became the voice for a generation of wrestling fans. You also did stuff for the Rangers, for the Cowboys. Broke the news to Lee Harvey Oswald that he was arrested because he had shot JFK. That's the most amazingly well-rounded resume I can think of.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's reporting right there. And a legendary voice.
He has a great voice.
A lot of times people use like a term to say something about somebody that's moved on. And I think I keep seeing over and over, and it came off my tweet. It comes out of my mouth every time I say it. Legend.
Yeah.
Like that is a true legend in this industry right there, because I went to the University of North Texas to study under him. Unfortunately, he retired the year before I got there.
Mm.
However, before that, you had sent me on an assignment. I believe it was to cover University of Texas at Dallas. UTD, like softball.
That is correct.
And I was like, okay, what do I do? And I talked to Bill Mercer, and I chatted with him for a long time, and he gave me his phone number and said, call me anytime if you ever need anything. And I was like, this is a legend telling me to call him anytime. And I think he was doing the games for his, like, his granddaughter was like, would you mind doing it? And he was like, yeah, I'll do that. He was just a guy that loved doing this. He enjoyed this business and he enjoyed being a mentor to people who were trying to be involved in this or people that were just trying to be involved in other things. He had that about him that he wanted to be involved with what they were doing and wanted to give them great advice, and you trusted him. Whenever he spoke, you trusted him and the advice that he was giving. And Kevin, one of the when I went to University of North Texas, Hank Dickinson was, and I think he still is, the professor who took over for Bill Mercer. And he would bring in Mark Falwell, Coop. He would bring in all these play-by-play guys, and they would all talk, and every one of them would point to Bill Mercer. Like, yeah, in some way, shape, or form, they would give credence to what Bill Mercer did in his career. And one of the things I still remember from Mark Falwell was he hated the word get, because the word get was lazy. He passes the ball, and he doesn't get the ball to this guy. He doesn't get this. He find other words. Like, build your vocabulary, yeah, was what Bill Mercer was always saying. One of the kindest men I've ever had the pleasure of working with.
So I finished my college degree at UTD, and Bill Mercer at that time came in to call the basketball games. And so I was on the newspaper at UTD, and they were like, hey, do you want to, maybe we could set this up. And so I had a little office at the newspaper that I never used. There was nothing in there. I mean, there was a desk and a chair, but I had no decorations or anything.
Did they have a computer?
Yes.
Okay.
But when it was time to talk to Bill Mercer, I went in there and talked with him. And we chatted for 15, 20 minutes, got all the relevant information and whatnot. And I was like, hey, man, I really appreciate your time. And he goes, you know, if you've got a minute, quick story for you. Because I had told him I was a wrestling fan about World Class Championship Wrestling and the Von Erichs. And I was like, sure. Just kicked my feet up on the desk. And just for the next 30 minutes, he just told me stories about, like, and he's like, what you have to remember about Kabuki or Abdullah the Butcher. And I was like, okay, great. And so he just talked about that for like a good 30 minutes. And so then last year, or I guess it was at the end of 23, when the Iron Claw came out, Bill Mercer, like, as a character, is prominently featured in there. Bill Mercer was at the premiere. Now, he's in a wheelchair at that point because, like, he was 99 when he died. But he's in a wheelchair. The people who flocked to see Bill Mercer, you would have thought, for some people there, he was their Zac Efron. Yes. Yeah. And he was like, oh my God, it's Bill Mercer. I need to go talk to him. And so it was just really cool because when I got to see Marshall and Ross at the premiere, I got to talk to Kevin Von Erich. But when Bill Mercer got there, people wanted to talk to him. And you could tell he loved just kind of like holding court, and he could do so wherever he was, even sitting in his wheelchair at the movie premiere. So I realize that, like, nationally, he might not get as much acclaim, but you look at a lot of people who broadcast here in North Texas, they were products directly indirectly of Bill Mercer.
Yeah, a lot. You're damn right about that. A lot of the people that are in our industry, by the way, at University of North Texas at Apogee Stadium, the Bill Mercer Press Club is the suite up there.
Okay.
So if you ever want to go through there.
Yeah.
I read two books before I made a leap from IT to this business. And one of them was Play-by-Play, Tales from Sportscasting, a Sportscasting Insider. It was his memoir.
Yeah.
I read that book and I was like, I got to go. And Kevin, I remember too, the day that our managing editor, Rick Mann, said, hey, you're going to go talk to Bill Mercer. He looked at me and said, you're going to have the best time. I wish I was you today. And I was like, I had no clue what I was in for. Yeah. You know, I had no clue. But once I'd read the book and once I knew what I was in for, that was why I wanted to go to UNT to study under him and learn from the dude that knew, man.
And it was in different ways, but George Foreman, Bill Mercer, huge voids left in the sporting community by their passing over the weekend. For the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Gridiron Gravy. Are the Cowboys actually going to have a running back competition? And do you want to see it?
Let's go.
Next on The Fan.
As Carson Wentz as our quarterback.
On second down, they will run it and run it. They will to Sanders. Big run. He's still on his feet. Bio Miles Sanders. It's a foot race to the 30. Can he go all the way? The answer is yes. 82-yard touchdown.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Are the Cowboys actually going to have some sort of running back competition? And will you care about how that turns out? We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But we talked about the men's bracket earlier. Wanted to give some local love. Shout out to the TCU women's basketball team. They beat Louisville, and they have advanced to the Sweet 16 for the first time ever.
That's awesome, dude.
Man, that was a really long delay.
I love TCU. That was not the reaction
I was hoping for.
Here's what I didn't want to happen. Because of my adoration for TCU, I didn't want them to be like, oh, there goes Corey again, always being on the TCU bandwagon.
Is SMU versus TCU just like runoff from Dallas versus Fort Worth people?
Yes, it's two people from different sides of the coin that just cannot stand. And they all just kind of meet together in Arlington, right?
Yeah.
And there's a comedian out there. I just was told this, Kevin. Something Mitchell. And his line is, they're two different people that meet in Fort Worth or meet in Arlington in the central location, and both of them get let down by the Cowboys there. You know, and I was like, dang, man, that's true, man. Though. And then Denton's just kind of left out there. UNT's just kind of left out in the nowhere.
Yeah, we're giving Jake some pointers as we go along. He played the gridiron music, even though we haven't done the gridiron intro yet. Do you think we should let that slide, or is he trying to tell us, why don't you get back on task and focus?
Reggie's right behind him. And Reggie knows how to do all that stuff still.
Still here, but he won't come on air.
I've been told Reggie still does that on his show. He's like, I want to make sure I run the board. This is my show.
Wow.
He's very demanding on that show.
Well.
But yeah, I think he's doing, this is the first time to work with us. He's learning. I'll give him I was just about to compliment him. And then I was like, don't do it because he'll mess up. I think Peyton set him up for failure earlier. I think you left your microphone off on purpose.
I could see that.
Yeah. So I'm going to blame that one on Peyton. This one I'll blame on him.
Peyton is an Esther.
Didn't even get to do our dip.
Right now, time to go around the entire NFL and dip into some gridiron gravy.
Dip.
Strike two. Yeah, I'm just kidding. All right. So let's talk about, I don't want to see this competition. Javonte Williams and Miles Sanders, they said they will not cede the lead role easily if the Cowboys draft a running back. That's great. I have seen you play as of late. And if there's a resurgence, a renaissance, if you will, that would be awesome. Let's be honest. If the Cowboys draft a running back in rounds 1, 2, or 3, maybe even 4, that person is the presumptive starter. Are they not?
Yeah. Yes. I think you're right about that. But anything after 1, I do kind of feel like it is a competition.
Okay.
I think because Javonte Williams, there have been times where he's been a good running back.
That's true.
Miles Sanders has had his moments as well. And I love this line from him from what they're telling me, they want a competitive room. Everyone go in there and compete and may the best man win. That's what you should be saying if you're Schottenheimer, true, if you're Steven, if you're Will McClay, if you're Jerry. Look, we don't know who's good at this position that we're going to have in this room. So please, somebody show that you're going to be good. That's what it sounds like because we don't know. And Javonte Williams kind of cast aside by Denver. Miles Sanders cast aside by most of NFL fans. And so there is a place. But I think if they don't get somebody in the first round and they get them in the second round, it'll be we're giving them the chance. We're giving them the process. They're learning how to find the bathroom, you know, like those things. Yeah. And then once they show their flash, they're like, oh, yeah, that's our starter. But I think Williams and Sanders, here's the thing. Those guys being backup roles or being, you know, accentuations to what they're doing, I think they're quality. I think they got quality people to do that job, what their job is supposed to be.
Now, Quinn Ewers is set to visit the Colts, Raiders, and Cowboys. We've talked about this plenty of times. The links potentially between the Cowboys and Quinn Ewers. I have no problem with that. Just as long as it's a day 3 pick.
Yeah.
If it's a day 3 pick, then like rock on, take your chances and
don't reach for him.
What happens. Yeah.
Don't reach. I think that he could use a lot more development. in the NFL, he could use a lot more development as a backup quarterback. He's not going to run away from anything. You saw his legs aren't that.
Yeah.
His arm isn't what I thought it was supposed to be. Like, it was supposed to have a big arm, but I was like, oh, it's decent. But I think he has a lot of room to grow. I would not mind him being a late round pick.
Now let's go to Xavier Worthy, because this saga has taken another interesting turn. Last month, maybe it's just a couple weeks ago, Xavier Worthy was arrested, but then not charged for allegations of domestic abuse. We've talked about this before. It can be a tricky balance between what's true, what's not, and what are the repercussions if somebody just makes things up. So now Xavier Worthy is suing his accuser, his ex-fiance Tia Jones. This, of course, courtesy of, you guessed it, TMZ.
Oh!
Because this is exactly the kind of story they're here for, and I think they do a really good job gathering this information. So Worthy has claimed that Tia Jones both abused him and made up claims of domestic violence in order to, quote, extort a home, money, cars, and other valuables from him.
Okay.
So
this is very interesting.
And so he said that he repeatedly asked her to leave their home after he learned that she had cheated on him. Again, I know this is turning into a he said, she said situation. Worthy claims that she destroyed his game room when asked to leave, then scratched his face and ripped chunks of his hair from his head.
Does he have proof of that, though? That's the right. Like, if you have pictures and you can say, look, this is what happened.
That's true.
Unless you break your own nose to, you know, fake your own Fight kidnapping Club style. Or something. Yeah.
The thing that's tough about this is, and I understand how society works, you're much more likely to believe that a man abused a woman in a domestic issue as opposed to the other way around. And there is some still ridiculous backwards thinking. I'm like, you got beat up by a lady? Like, that's absurd.
And most times, Kevin, if you're in public and you see a couple fighting, you're probably going to try to defend the woman first because you think she can't handle herself.
Which, for most of the time, I'm sure is the way to go. But sometimes abuse is abuse. And especially in a gladiator sport like football, it's probably tough to come out and say, no, she was abusing me.
Yeah, no, I bet it definitely is.
Because, you know, like, people are going to be out on the field looking for whatever trash talk advantage or whatever. But he's gone on the offensive and said she also stole more than $150,000 worth of cash and property from his residence while he was in police custody. So you think about it, he gets arrested and he accuses that in that time, that's when, after he was like, we're done, she took all this stuff and took off. Jeez. So we'll see how that plays out. Right now, he said, she said, but a very complex and unfortunate situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see stuff like this happen way too often. All right, let's talk about the Giants. 2 years, $8 million deal total for Jameis Winston. Do you think this is step one and he's going to be their backup quarterback? Or do you think this is the step they want it to be, so they can be fine, but not really that great and get another high draft?
He does kind of put you in a 6 to 8 win potential area.
Which is probably too high for them, right?
Yeah, and they still are interested in getting Russell Wilson from what I see. So, like, that's still a possibility.
Is Russell Wilson the backup choice to Aaron Rodgers? Is that what we're learning along all of this?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is kind of the prized cow here, and then Russell Wilson is the next one on the list. The Winston, though, this is a perfect place for him. He needs to be in New York so he can be on TV more, because that dude is hilarious.
That's
all right?
True.
I know people have thoughts about him based on what he did as a teenager in college. I get it. And I don't know his off the field stuff,
right,
but everything I see, I'm like, dude, he's great. He's self-deprecating. He has jokes. He's funny about a lot of different things. So I think he's in the perfect spot, and him, it might be really interesting to see how him and Malik Nabers work together, because he likes to throw it. He likes to throw it far. And if you can run under it, he's all about it.
Who do you think has the worst roster of talent? I'm not saying this is directly related to the Giants. I'm not saying it's not. Who do you think right now, before the draft, which team has the worst talent in the NFL?
I would say Carolina, but it's probably the Giants.
Okay. New York Giants, they're tired of your naysaying. They only have the fourth worst roster NFL per Bleacher Report. It goes Jacksonville is fifth worst, then the Giants, then the Patriots.
Or the Cardinals.
They didn't make the top five.
Really?
They're moving up in the world. Well, I guess the bottom five. The Tennessee Titans have the second least amount of talent. And Corey, you stick with your instincts and you win. Carolina Panthers have the most talent-deficient roster in the NFL per the Bleacher Report. You can start with their needs of wide receiver, safety, edge. If you still think they need a quarterback, that's obviously a fair discussion worth having. But they are number one in terms of the least talented team in the NFL.
They do have a first round. They own their first round pick.
Everybody has their first round pick.
Second round, third round, fourth round, fifth round, seventh. They need to bump up and get another first, another couple seconds.
Like that,
they need to do something to add to this because they didn't do enough there in free agency, and then they still need to grow and develop.
Yeah, that's fair. Unfortunate, but number one least talented team in all of the NFL. We're the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, did the Rangers leave surprised with more pitching questions or answers? And other roster spots that are still up for grabs. We'll do that next right here on The Fan.